Hey, DC, did you know that it's Arbor Week? And that means it's the perfect time to learn about and protect our trees. Local nonprofit Casey Trees is helping to protect our tree canopy by teaching kids the value of trees and working with them to plant new ones. The trees they're planting now ensure that future Washingtonians have a beautiful and healthy city. So support Casey Trees today by giving online at caseytrees.org/give. Your tax-deductible donation will go directly toward tree planting efforts in historically underserved communities, including schools in Wards 5, 7, and 8. Once again, that's caseytrees.org/give. Let's plant some trees, y'all!
Today on CityCast DC, it is our first ever live taping. We're at Politics and Prose at Union Market. But we are still talking about the news in DC. We've got too many judicial vacancies. We've got too many bears at the zoo. Of course, because we're here in a bookstore, we got books we're going to talk about. I'm here with David Plotz, who runs the company, and with Anton Bogomazov, who is the chief adult book buyer at P&P, and ergo one of the most powerful people in the publishing industry. Take heed. Today is Friday, December 2nd, 2022. I'm Michael Schaefer, and this is CityCast DC. So our first segment, we do a segment called The Bigger Picture, where we take a little piece of news and we try to put it in a bigger context to explain what it means about Washington. There's a story that the Post reported this week about judicial vacancies. About a quarter of the judge jobs at local court in D.C. are unfilled. And because of the weird constitutional status of D.C., these judge jobs require confirmation by the Senate. And that confirmation is slow in coming, just like every other confirmation is. These are not like big deciding constitutional matters kinds of judges. These are like divorce and child custody and probate and like whatever. These are not intellectually sexy judgeships, but they are justice. And there's a big backlog at court. It is, to my mind, really screwed up because just think of the, you know, restraining orders that aren't getting issued, or the person who is in a battle about alimony and is not getting a check ordered to them. And it's because, again, of the weird, if DC were a state, you know, we would either elect hackish local judges or we would have them appointed. Some of the points we would not need, you know, Ted Cruz's say-so to have our traffic court staffed. That's like a, you know, it's weird. It's, you look at the story and it's like, oh, judicial vacancy, like who cares? But it actually touches onto huge aspects of our sort of life and condition of those of us who live in the District of Columbia.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's striking to me is that when you think about this as a national citizen, the reason these judges are held up is because, although there's a Democratic-controlled Senate and although there have been nominees submitted for about half of the positions, of the 16 open seats, there are 8 nominees there and so these are just being held up in the Senate. But the reason they're held up is because the Democrats choose not to waste precious Senate time mm-hmm. on dealing with DC judges. They only have a limited amount of time left in this Congress to deal with issues. And dealing with DC judges is a pretty low priority. And I, as a national citizen, I agree with that.
Totally. That's the thing about, like, we act outraged about, like, Congress is messing around in our business, but the outrage should be also from their constituents, because, you know, they're not sending them up here to, like, decide on some judge who's going to, like, adjudicate muggings in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it is an amazing waste. And it is, I think, one of the things that I was struck by is that our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, has introduced a bill, which will not succeed, but a bill that would make judges have the same status as D.C. legislation. So I actually didn't, I'm ashamed to say, until this morning, I didn't really understand exactly what happens with D.C. legislation. When D.C. passes a bill, passes a law, and the mayor signs it, it goes to Congress, and Congress has 30 days generally to either go up or down on it. But both houses have to go down on the bill for it to die, and the president actually has to go down That's a terrible go down on the bill. That is a weird.
No, that's came
that
wrong.
That was more like Clinton. That was like more Clinton presidency. We will not be going down on the bill. The House and Senate both have to reject this bill, and the president has to reject this bill for it to fail. But with court nominations, the Senate has to affirmatively confirm them. But Norton has proposed, we should be able to put forward judges. And if you don't want the judges, the House and Senate can vote those judges down, and we will not get those judges. But if you don't do anything after 30 days, they will become judges. And that seems like a sensical. Right. That makes sense.
Right, yeah. Well, she must be so tired just fighting for the district to have its own role for all these years.
Yeah, and it's like just it's an act of just saying no. And actually, with this story of the judges, there is a separate Congress element. We talked about this on our show last week or the week before, which is that there's been a wholesale rewrite of D.C.'s criminal code, which was like 100 years old and had like regulations about like ball playing in alleys and stuff like that. So they rewrote it. The U.S. attorney says he's got some reservations, but he's basically on board. It passed overwhelmingly through the D.C. Council. But it is the kind of set of changes that if you are, say, a right-wing member of Congress who wants to portray urban America as a crime-ridden hellscape, you can very easily demagogue it by saying, you know, these people are pro-criminal, which is precisely what's happening. So the top Republican on the Oversight Committee, who will take over that committee in January, he said he's going to do everything in his power to stop this bill from becoming law. So that's hanging out there. But even if it does become law, that means judges are going to have to sort of come to understand a new set of rules. It's kind of smart. They're phasing it in over time. But this sort of further stresses a situation where there's not enough judges, because their job, it will for a time become more complicated because they've got new rules to implement.
Right. And in particular, there's the one shift which is huge, which is now if you are accused of a misdemeanor offense, you can request a jury trial, which would for years, that has not been allowed in D.C. And the estimate is that that will add, I think, 200 jury trials to the D.C. court system, which is a huge number. And if we are already short of judges,
right,
the idea of adding 200 more trials seems like a problem. Although I don't – do you guys think that misdemeanor – there should be a right to a jury trial for a misdemeanor? I wasn't sure that made sense. Now, this is a criminal court. This is a criminal code revision that's gone through decades of work, so they know more than I do. But I
kind of feel like it's fair. I mean, if you're facing jail time, you're facing jail time. It's unpleasant, and you should be judged by a jury of your peers. I seem to get a jury duty notice like clockwork every 2 years.
Well, now you get more. Now you're going to get more.
Right. So I think that, you know, that will be on us. But it's, I don't know. That seems like a decent change to me.
And they also will allow more people to sort of petition for reduced sentence. Is that true? Like if you're incarcerated. So it's a good change in a sense, because we know we incarcerate so many people. And to be honest, I think some of them should have reduced sentences.
Right.
So like is sort of like a societal change is good.
Hey, DC art lovers, award-winning actress and playwright Anna Deavere Smith is giving a four-part lecture series at the National Gallery of Art. It is called Chasing That Which Is Not Me / Chasing That Which Is Me. Smith is known for her roles in The West Wing, Inventing Anna, and Nurse Jackie, so you definitely want to come take a listen. It'll be every Sunday from April 28th to May 19th at 2 p.m. And the best part is they are totally free! Register to secure your spot at nga.gov/melon24.
All right, speaking of things behind bars.
That was an awesome transition.
I've been waiting for that. I actually didn't plan that in advance.
So I'm going to lead this section of CityCast today. We're going to talk about the zoo. And we're going to talk about it in the context of the new bear cubs at the zoo. There are always new bear cubs at the zoo. You pick your bear. You can have a panda bear cub. You can get a polar bear cub. We had one of those once. And now there are two new Andean bear cubs, the first to be born at the zoo in 9 years. They were just born. They have two new cubs, and there's a cub cam. You can watch them. Apparently, they are very loud, so you should mute your speakers a little bit before you turn it on. They still haven't determined what sex they are. And the zoo folks are cautiously optimistic about these bears, which is great. But it made me want to talk about the zoo, which I live a block from the zoo. I literally live in the building right next door to the zoo.
Those loud bears might wake you up.
They might. They might wake me up. Well, my general experience with the zoo is actually you can go, you just can't find an animal because the zoo hides all the animals, is my general experience with the zoo.
I'm convinced that red pandas are actually just propaganda.
The red
Every time I go, there's not a red panda.
Well, the Rusty just died. The red
did
panda
he?
Just died.
Did he?
There's this magnificent red panda. There's a red panda. I love this red panda. Do you all know about Rusty, the red panda?
Is he the one who escaped?
He escaped back, many years ago. He escaped.
One job, zoo.
Yeah. He escaped, and I think it's like one of these things maybe with humans, if you can escape out of a prison, they're like, this prison can't keep you anymore. And so they transferred Rusty to the Pueblo Zoo. So Rusty's been living in the Pueblo Zoo. But Rusty just died a few weeks ago. But that I love that red panda. They're just full of piss and vinegar.
Never seen them.
I like a zoo animal that escapes. What part of the zoo, Anton, do you think really works?
You know, I try to avoid the panda part because it's always traffic jam there. So that's, I mean, as somebody who also goes to the zoo very frequently because I live nearby and I used to run through, and the only trick is you have to run from the front to the back, otherwise you have to climb that hill. It's terrible. But the new elephant part is beautiful that they made a few years ago. Like, how many years ago? What is time? I think it's wonderful. I think that whole part is wonderful. But I don't have like a strong opinion about zoo layout. So I'm
Mike,
excited to hear.
Do you have a favorite zoo part?
Well, you know, I think if you grew up in D.C., you got taken to the zoo a lot. And because the price is right, you know, I was shocked when I moved to another city and you had to pay to go to the zoo. I was like, what the hell is this? But the thing is, your parents have longer legs than you do. And there you are in the zoo, and it's always like 108 degrees or something.
It is. It's hotter in the zoo. It's its own microclimate.
And so you go through, you know, you strut along, and you probably start on Connecticut Avenue. And by the time you get to the end, you don't notice this, but you have been walking downhill for quite a long time. And then, in order to leave, guess what you have to do? And that's where they get you on the money, because that's exactly when you see the place that's selling cold drinks. So that part of the zoo, you know, that works for them pretty well. A couple of years ago, when I was the parent and I took my child there, and we took the bus down Connecticut Avenue, and we walked in, and blah, blah, blah. And at the end, I thought, you know what? What if I just walk out that gate there, and there was another bus kind of going back where we came from?
At the bottom.
At the bottom. And I thought, this, I have figured it out. I am, like, I'm the best parent that I can possibly be right now.
But it's actually kind of crazy, because you get off the metro, and you get off at the Woodley Park Zoo Station, and you think, oh, there's the zoo. And then you walk up. You know, you ascend K3 to get to the zoo, and then you get to the zoo, and then you like have this long, as you say, this deceptive descent. Yep. And it is, I don't know, who thought that it was a good idea to put a zoo on the steepest hill in the city? It's lunacy.
Right.
Have you ever, I've never been to another zoo which wasn't basically flat.
And no like wonder a nice Rusty thing. Left.
It's a free workout.
Do you want a workout?
I run through the zoo. It's a great place to run through.
I'm totally with you about the elephants. The other place I love is the seals and sea lions and otters. Like, that area I feel is really good. The big cats are so depressing. They should get rid of the big cats.
Wait, David, I think you need to tell us about this. You have very strong, shockingly strong feelings about pandas.
Yes, I do think that the thing that I hate most about the zoo is really the pandas. And I feel that it's an embarrassment for Washington that we are so obsessed with these pandas. I mean, A, the whole thing has become this real scam of the Chinese government, where they are getting U.S. zoos to pay extraordinary sums to basically outsource their eugenic breeding program to us, and we pay to do it. But the pandas themselves are such a disappointment. I have been to that zoo just hundreds of times over my life, including as a kid. I came to Washington when right as Xing Xing and Ling Ling came. We like came to Washington together. We grew up together. Unlike them, I successfully bred. I was able to manage that because like I'm a human being and I have a motivation to breed. Pandas have no motivation to actually breed. They just laze around. They are just unpleasant. They have incredibly good PR because they're charismatic, they're beautiful. They've got this cool, like, we're black and white, we've got a cool look thing going on. But it's just ridiculous the way we anthropomorphize them and attribute goodwill and grace and niceness to these animals, which are just lumps. And I, as I said, like, that's why I love those red pandas. The red pandas are full of energy. They want out. They want to breed. They just want, they want to do it. They want to live. They want to go. They want it. And the pandas don't. And I feel it's embarrassing that we get, and the Washington Post gets so excited about it. And we Washingtonians get so excited about the panda.
I think you could maybe discuss this with the incoming majority in the House of Representatives who will be meddling in Washington and have a strong anti-People's Republic of China bent.
That's a totally.
I mean, that,
totally.
I'm the congressman who got the pandas kicked out of the zoo and replaced them with some American animals.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about, we got a third subject for you today, and it's appropriate for a bookstore, which is that Anton, whose title is the chief adult book buyer here at Politics and Prose, and I bet you get jokes about that quite frequently.
I'm very proud of having that word adult in my job title, yes. Finally, I'm an adult.
What do you got this season?
So you have all done your holiday shopping, right? You're all ready. Before I talk about actual books, I just want to do a bit of like, here's how you should holiday shop. And the answer is you should shop at your local bookstore. I know it's very tempting to wait till the last day and, you know, order everything on Amazon that will get delivered tomorrow. But there is a study that was just released by the American Bookseller Association with Harvard that basically says when you just buy stuff on Amazon, less than 5% goes back to your sort of local economy. And if you do it at your local bookstore, that figure rises to 30% or higher. So basically the impact on local community is four times at least than what you get when you buy sort of from Amazon. And also, you know what? You know who doesn't need more money? Jeff Bezos. Like, he has so much money, and he's obviously not using it for anything good. But we do so many good things. You know, we work with local schools. We work with local nonprofits. Our children's department runs a donor program every December when they donate the books to organizations. We work with librarians. We work with teachers to bring books to kids. So we do all kinds of things. But
are you thinking about buying the football team?
We don't have that kind of money in a bookstore business. but, you know, the December can really make it or break it, like, for an independent, like, local bookshop. There's a whole number of bookshops to just, if this is not your local store, there might be somewhere closer to you. But we have a membership program, which is basically like kind of NPR membership. Like, you pay what is now $25 a year, and you get to go for free to all the in-store events. And you also get perks, like you get frequent buyer programs. There's a member sale that starts December 2nd and goes that weekend. So that's a good way to sort of just pay for a membership, and then you sort of get it back immediately. And to help you make your decisions, we do holiday catalog every year, which we mail to all our members, but we also have paper copies and we have it online on a website if you want. And I'm gonna just briefly mention some books that are either DC connected or by authors who have connections in DC, plus a couple of books that I just really, really like, so I'm gonna break that rule. I'm going to start with fiction. For no reason. So we have Mercury Pictures Presents by Anthony Mara. Anthony Mara grew up in D.C. He no longer lives here, I think, but his family still does. So he's a local person. And this is a great historical novel to give to somebody who really likes sort of 20th century. A lot of characters, a lot of points of view, things jump around. It sort of centers around World War II and people escaping Nazi regimes and also the making of the movies, as the title might suggest. So great read. He's a very lively writer. And then the second book, I'm going to break the rule of sort of local author. It is called You Made a Fool of Death with Your Beauty by Akweke Emezi. And they are probably one of my favorite living authors now. They write novels. They do young adult books. They're also visual artists. This is their romance novel, but it's not like a rom-com romance novel. It's absolutely gorgeous and like so sensual and so good at sort of doing like desire and longing when it comes to relationships that might be a little taboo. So this is spicy. And then we're gonna go to nonfiction. So Secret City by James Kirchick. It is the history of gay Washington. It goes through sort of some power players, some political players that, you know, had to be in the closet. Yeah, you guys did.
We had Jamie Kirchick, the author of that book, on our pod. It's like capital W Washington, not, you know, lowercase hometown. But it's a wonderful book.
Yeah, it's like local history buff, nonfiction reader, absolutely. The next one is called Bird Brother by Rodney Stotz. And I think this is the one that might be overlooked by some of the best of lists, because, you know, right now it's the best of lists. Everything's the best. Everyone published the best lists. He is a D.C. local, and he grew up in Anacostia and got sort of a rough start on life. And at one point got a job cleaning up the Anacostia River. And he got into wildlife conservation and birds, and he's a master falconer. And I know it will shock you to find out there's like a handful of black master falconers in the U.S., and he's one of them.
It's a wonderful book.
So, yeah, it's fascinating memoir. So it's memoir slash sort of nature writing and just great book to give. All right, next one, we go to another local author, Manil Suri. He lives in Silver Spring, I believe. And this is called The Big Bang of Numbers. And basically he says, well, we've tried to explain the origin of the universe using everything from mythology to astrophysics. What if we just use math? And he is also a novelist, so he's a very good storyteller. And this is your science nerd gift of the year. And this one is Shahan Mufti's American Caliph, which is the most fascinating DC history book you can give to somebody this year, because it is about events in 1977 when seven men took over B'nai B'rith International and Islamic Center and in DC. And it goes into great detail and background why it happened, like what the motivations were, the history of all this. So it covers everything from a general history that you might not know to very hyper-local DC history.
You can also listen to our interview with him on the pod.
Yeah, I mean, that was an event I totally lived through, and your interview was fascinating, Mike, and this I cannot wait for this book.
And this is my last nonfiction pick. This is where the silver line should have gone instead of the Dulles, because honestly, they are in Warrenton, Virginia.
The book is called Farmhouse
Red Truck Bakery Farmhouse Cookbook. And Red Truck Bakery, they are wizards, because everything I've had like from them, baked by them, is absolutely so delicious. It's unreal. So if they can teach people how to make that, they get all the prizes. So those are like the general, you know, picks, fiction, nonfiction. And obviously, if nothing on this list appeals to you, if nothing in the newsletter appeals to you, come to your bookseller, because we have way more books inside our heads and we can give you so many more suggestions.
Thoughts, what DC books are you giving this year?
So I'm giving, and I gave myself G-Man, which is a book about J. Edgar Hoover, a new biography of J. Edgar Hoover by a historian named Beverly Gage. And it's supposed to be amazing. My colleague Emily Bazelon just interviewed her for the GabFest, and I'm super excited about that.
I have one more book that is DC-based. That is my sort of, I'll close the section out with that. And it's a kind of a shameless plug because it's a book by my really good friend and really wonderful author, Susan Call. It's called Bookish People, and it is about bookstores. Is it about politics and prose? I cannot say. It is an unnamed bookstore, and the characters are wonderful. It's funny. There's a lot of sort of misadventures, and it's very true to what it is to work at a bookstore.
You know, I also read that book, and I really enjoyed it. And I have to admit that, you know, I knew she has worked at Politics and Prose for a long time, that I thought, like, maybe they're mad at her. Maybe there's like a, it's like a Romana Clay, and she's like doing scathing portraits of her colleagues, and there's like jokes in there that like, that are at the expense of people. And maybe there's like a really delicious catty fight about it, and maybe I can cover it. Because I am a reporter, and we are horrible, vulture-ish people. Yeah. But it turns out that that all you guys are really happy with the book.
Oh, no. she's so good at making very real characters, but they are not just, you know, pastiches of people. They're not like, oh, that's that person. No, no. Yeah, so it is a very good book.
All right, well, that is all we got today. David Plotz and Anton Bogomazov, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you to our first ever live audience, too. Thank you. Woo! Our lead producer is Priyanka Tilve. Our producers are Meg Dalton and Julia Caron. Our newsletter writer is Kayla Cote Stemmerman. And our hosts are Bridget Todd and me, Michael Shaver from Politico. Music is by Alex Roldan. If you enjoyed the show, like the audience did.
They did. Oh, they did.
Definitely subscribe, and maybe go ahead and subscribe your best friend's phone too. We'll be back Monday morning with more news from around the city. Bye.